Hello, everyone. My name is Andy A. Kassam, and I am an organizer with the League of Education Voters. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. This is the second webinar in our series of lunchtime webinars. Our goal is to bring you succinct info sessions at the lunch hour on some of LEV's top education priorities. We've also worked to create these webinars in a fashion that helps build a base of knowledge for advocacy. Each topic we've selected includes three presentations. The first of the three in each series will engage advocates on a personal level. We're hoping to provide some tangible skills for you and your young person to help navigate the public school system. The second presentation in the series helps put context to the issue. Many of the barriers we face in schools as individuals are actually quite common to parents, guardians, and families. Through sharing and building relationships, we help empower ourselves to keep advocating. The third webinar in the series will bring you a bright spot or an example of best practices. In advocacy and social change, it's important to share your vision that outlines how you think schools should be, not merely what we believe is unjust. The format is simple. We're going to dive right in into a presentation from our guest. We will wrap up a few minutes early so our presenter can answer questions from the audience. You'll notice we have a chat function on the left-hand side of the webinar. This is a space for you to pose questions to the presenter. Please remember to be respectful, as all this information is public and will be archived in our website for later access. Lastly, visit our webpage at www.educationvoters.org in order to view the full list of past and future webinars. Our next webinar is on August 8th. In the third of our three-part discipline series, we'll be presenting on highlights and solutions that transform student discipline. All right, well, without further ado, our presentation today will be given by Maggie Wilkins. Maggie is the state field coordinator at the League of Education Voters and has been with LEV for 4 years. She recently led LEV's statewide campaign on transforming school discipline, which coordinated over 40 advocacy organizations and hundreds of activists to help win state legislation that will keep more kids in school. Welcome, Maggie. Please take it away.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Andy A., for that lovely introduction. I'll get started because we don't have a ton of time. We want to get through a lot of information today, but I will start by briefly introducing our organization. We are the League of Education Voters. We're a statewide group that works to improve public education from cradle to career with ample, equitable, and stable funding. We are about 10, 11 years old. We started as a group of concerned parents, working on levy and bond campaigns and working on funding, and through the years we've transformed into much more. So a lot of times, actually, we get questions about why student discipline and why discipline policies in particular. And before we get started in the presentation, I wanted to play a quick video that outlines the school-to-prison pipeline and a lot of the components. So I'm going to pull that up for us here. And if folks are having trouble hearing, please write in the chat box for that.
Family, a place where we're always welcome. You walk into school, the first thing you see is metal detectors. The first face that greets you is the school police officer.
All the kids want to do is go to school. They don't want to go to school, be labeled a criminal.
Folks talk about school-to-prison pipeline, it's real. There's a direct correlation to lack of education, economic opportunity, and also incidences of incarceration.
We've had
Yeah, so hopefully that video worked for most folks. I see some comments on the left-hand side here. I'll be sure to share the link to this video on our website and so that you can access it after the conference. Also, you can just Google Stop School to Prison Pipeline by Advancement Project, and you should be able to locate it on YouTube. So I wanted to start by talking about why we're focusing in on school discipline policies. And for League of Education Voters, we have a big investment in discipline policies because it directly affects student learning. And Washington is one of 9 states in the nation that has a growing achievement gap. And what we see in recent times is that this is a problem that's pervasive. Suspensions and expulsions have been increasing steadily for the last 20 years. They've doubled in some states. And the sheer number of kids that are removed from school is also increasing. So you'll see some statistics that show 1 in 9 students in the 2009-2010 school year were actually suspended from school at least one time. And we know that in Washington, 1 in 4 students will not graduate high school within 4 years of starting. We know that suspension is very detrimental to academic and student success. And suspension and expulsion prior to freshman year of high school is actually one of the largest indicators of a student dropping out early. As you can see, a student who's suspended is 2 times more likely to drop out. We also know from national statistics that of all the males in state and federal prisons, 68% of them do not have a high school diploma. So there's an extremely high correlation between crime and between imprisonment and in school suspension. We also know that suspension doesn't work. There's not a ton of evidence that that shows that suspensions or expulsions or removing students from the classroom actually prevents any misbehaviors. And it doesn't, in a lot of ways, students have said that it's not a meaningful punishment either. That if 2 students have an argument or a fight, that issue just isn't resolved over time by removing a student from the classroom. We also saw that through a report with Washington Appleseed that of the 295 school districts in Washington, only 178 could produce any kind of meaningful data or comprehensive data that tracked which students were suspended or expelled. And we see from studies that schools with high rates of suspension and expulsion, they actually have higher dropout rates than schools that don't rely so heavily on exclusionary discipline policies. Lastly, this is an issue of equity for League of Education Voters. Washington's 1 of 9 states, again, with a persistent achievement and opportunity gap. And we know that these policies in particular, exclusionary discipline policies, disproportionately impact students of color, low-income students, students with disabilities, foster care students, and transgendered LGBTQ communities as well. Are more folks having the same issue? Is the movie screen still stuck? You can respond by using the chat function. Okay, I would suggest that that folks try to reload the page. So if you're having issues, try to just press the refresh button and hopefully it'll come back. I'm going to keep moving on. And talk about kind of how we got to this issue with student discipline. Because by looking at policies in history, we can kind of understand the context for where we are now. And what we've seen is that over the past 40-something years, you know, this isn't an issue that popped up overnight. This is this has happened over a long period of time through cultural and political shifts. And I wanted to share that between 1970 and 2005, prison population in the United States increased by 700%. And that's, you'll hear folks talk about mass incarceration, or you'll hear politicians reference the war on drugs, war on poverty. There was definitely a political shift and a crackdown in the emergence of this mentality called zero tolerance, basically, started popping up all across the country. And 1994 was a big year for the public school system in the United States because of the Federal Guns Free Schools Act. And so this was a policy adopted by all schools across the nation that said to students that we have a zero tolerance policy on weapons and guns, and so you will be removed from school for 1 year minimum if you're caught. But what we saw is that by 1997, schools and principals were adopting the same zero-tolerance mentality for all types of rule infractions, some of them not safety-related. You can see, for example, 87% of schools adopted zero-tolerance for alcohol use and 79% for the use of tobacco on campus. So obviously this has resulted in far more students being suspended and far more students being suspended for longer amounts of time. And part of the issues that we're facing now in 2013 is that our schools are under-resourced, and our principals and administrators and teachers, they're facing issues that we didn't have to face 10 years ago even. And I always like to talk about cyberbullying or, you know, any kind of issue that students are having online. One school administrator shared with me that 90% of their physical fights on campus actually started on Facebook or started on Twitter or Instagram. And this is important because these are pieces of technology and software that this generation of kids have grown up using. And it's hard for a principal or an assistant principal that doesn't use the software in the same way to come up with an appropriate punishment or kind of understand, you know, how to deal with issues that are occurring online. So that's one example of a problem that's occurring now in 2013 that's resulting in more students being kicked out of school. And all of these policy shifts, we can absolutely understand where they came from, the desire to keep schools safe and to have objective discipline policies. It's extremely noble. And we know that the mid-90s, there was quite a bit of violence on campus and instances like Columbine that had parents wanting more safety and school administrators wanting safety on their campus as well. So I like to actually define more in depth what the school-to-prison pipeline is, because it's more than just written and explicit policies. You can see on the left-hand side that there are some tangible things that occur in a school that make it feel more like a prison and that make students feel disengaged. The increase in police presence on campus is a good example. There are policies that now mandate students be arrested on school campus and sent directly to juvenile justice system. We also see a lot of punishments that just aren't appropriate for the age level of the rule breaker. And one example that comes to mind is the 7-year-old boy in Chicago that was handcuffed, removed from his classroom, and taken to the principal's office and told he would never see his parents again and he could potentially go to jail if he didn't start behaving in class. And so when this student was suspended and handcuffed, he was identified as being disruptive and defiant in class. And being taken out of class in handcuffs, this actually is completely inappropriate. It's traumatizing for some young people. And so that's just one example of how we should reassess how we're treating our young students as well as our older students. There are also plenty of examples of indefinite periods of time that students are removed from school for. And so we know that long-term suspensions in Washington did not used to have an end date. So they could drag on and be as long as an actual expulsion in itself. And this creates a problem because there's no clear path back for students to re-enroll into their school. And once students Well, previously, I'll get to the legislation that changed this in a bit, but previously in Washington, if you were expelled, there was no option for you to return to your school district. So you would have to go to a neighboring school district, or you'd have to petition the superintendent to get back in to your original school district. So these are examples of very tangible barriers for students in their quest to graduate on time. Some of the less tangible and the implicit ideas we talk about are around how we build school culture and how we create relationships with young students and adults. So, for example, after Newton, overnight there was legislation introduced that would give schools funding for armed security guards across the country. And so we see the increase of video cameras and metal detectors, the use of police dogs and restraints, and actual uniformed officers on campus. And these, essentially, these things are used to create threats for young people into threatening them into behaving preemptively. These are things that happen and occur in prisons and jails, and they're now being used within schools. We also know that the zero-tolerance mentality is fairly detrimental for kids, especially for something like tobacco use or for something subjectively enforced like dress code. Zero tolerance doesn't give a student an opportunity to make up for what they did or to repair any of the relationships that they may have injured. Again, we know that suspension and expulsion are often punishments that are void of resolution for the person that does the offending and also for the student that had been offended. Some of the other issues we see in schools are adults having core beliefs that some kids are problems and always will be problems, and that adults aren't necessarily concerned about where that student's going after hours, but they know that they just can't stay at the school and they can't continue to disrupt their classrooms. I wanted to talk a little bit about how disproportionality plays out in some of these these policies. There's a goal and an aim of objectivity, but we actually see quite a bit of inequity in who gets disciplined, especially if we're looking at the list of examples on the left-hand side. So defiance and disrespect and disruption, these mean fairly different things for different people, as they should. And even something like tardiness, a teacher may let one student sneak in the door a couple minutes late one day and just may not do that the next day for another student. So these are rule infractions that don't have clear definitions, and as a result, they're not enforced uniformly on student populations. On the right-hand side, it's a little bit clearer what these rule infractions are. It's easier to know if a student has a weapon, and so we see less disproportionality in things like vandalism and drug use. Essentially, the issue here is that we don't currently have the tools. We don't have better tools and solutions that are as commonplace as suspensions currently are. And you'll see in one statistic here, just 5% of suspensions were given due to safety-related rule offenses, and then the other 95 were for those very subjective rule infractions I talked about just now, like disruption and like tardiness. And so what's occurring is that principals and schools are using catch-all terms like defiance and disruption to essentially remove any young person that poses a challenge to an adult. Luckily, we have some good news. And like Andy, I mentioned before, through the work that we did in this last legislative session, working with community advocates and activists, we passed Bill 5946, which was actually a pretty large bill. It had 4 to 5 different education components, and one of those was addressed transforming school discipline. And so we got some really great actual policy changes in addition to increased regulations on how schools collect and share data. And so I'll go through a couple of these wins, and then we'll get to Q&A. And so first is that Washington now has a maximum length on a suspension and expulsion, and it's one calendar year, which is helpful for students that have maybe been suspended or expelled and have taken the necessary steps or have done their behavior modification courses to actually re-enroll back in that school district that they were removed from. We also know that the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction will convene a discipline task force that's going to help develop standard definitions for some of those subjective rule infractions we talked about earlier, and also to help develop data collection standards so that all 295 school districts are on the same page about what they're collecting, when they're collecting, and who they're actually giving that information to. And part of this bill would require that OSPI actually share this information publicly, which it hasn't done prior to. And so we would be able to see online suspension and expulsion rates broken down by race, ethnicity, and gender, things like income levels and homelessness. So some of these areas where we see all the subjectivity, we'll actually be able to look and track online. Two more important details to talk about is that schools will now be required to convert emergency expulsions within 10 school days. And so emergency expulsions occur when there's an issue on campus and the adults don't necessarily have the time to figure out kind of what happened, but there's concern about safety. So they'll send most parties home at that time. What ends up happening is that sometimes days and days and days go by without principals or assistant principals actually converting that emergency expulsion into a suspension or a long-term suspension or expulsion. So this would require districts to do that in a timely fashion. And lastly, there's a bit of information about what school districts should do for students that are being suspended and expelled. One is convening a school re-enrollment meeting with the student. This would be within 20 days of the suspension and expulsion, and no later than 5 days before the student's enrollment. And so this is that piece that helps students and families know what their path back to the school district looks like. There's also a piece that looks at what school districts must do to create a re-engagement plan that would be tailored specifically for the student who's been suspended and expelled. And so we're really pleased with these wins this legislative session. Again, it was a lot of work from community members, and this is just the start for us. We are really looking forward to this next legislative session. And so with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that folks may have. I'm going to try to scroll back up through the chat and find out, but if people have questions, just go ahead and post them in again, and that might make it easier. Great, so we have one question asking if we can describe the discipline task force language in the bill. And I do, Maria, I do have more information on exactly what that looks like. I don't have it in front of me, so I can definitely follow up with you and tell you in-depthly what the task force will look like. I know it will include members of the ethnic commissions in Washington. It'll include advocacy groups. There will be folks from OSPI and from other state governing agencies. And so we don't quite know the exact time that this task force will be put into place and implemented, but we'll definitely keep our eyes on it because there's been quite a few community members that have been interested in participating and seeing these changes through. So next question is, do school boards have to adopt this bill as policy? And when is the start date to implement? How can we know when to hold school districts accountable to implement? And so as soon as this bill was signed, it went into law. And so currently this is the law for all schools in Washington State. Due to changes in the student data collection system. We are not expecting to see public information on OSPI's website until the 2014 school year ends. There's got to be a full school calendar in order for this information to be put online. And in terms of holding school districts accountable to implement, that's a fantastic question. And my advice is to get familiar with the bill. And, you know, if you have relationships with your school board members or superintendents or principals, they're receiving information through WASDA currently. And that just comes in memo form. So we've seen a couple of them, and it just doesn't hurt to gently remind district administrators and school board members that this bill did pass and that deadlines are coming up pretty quick. So if there are no more questions, looks like there is one more. I'm having trouble following the chats here. Can you, Andy, can you see? So I'm having a lot of trouble following the chat, but I have your names and your emails, and so I can follow up with you one-to-one about what these questions are and what our two cents are as League of Education Voters. So before we close, just wanted to let everybody know again that our next webinar is going to be on August 8th, and it's the third in our three-part discipline series. And Tracy Sherman of LEV will be presenting on some highlights and solutions that transform school discipline here in Washington State. So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and hope that you can join us on August 8th as well.